Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Who can fathom the spirit of the Lord or instruct the Lord as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, and who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighed the islands as though they were fine dust. Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him, all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. With whom then will you compare God? To what image will you liken him? As for an idol, a worker metal casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. A person too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot. They look for a skilled worker to set up an idol that will not topple. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls forth each of them by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.
Well, please do keep the Bible open at that page and have a look, if you would, at again at verse 29, chapter 40, verse 29, top of page 726. Of the Red Church Bibles, it says there, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Do you know what it feels like to feel weak and weary? To be so overwhelmed by a problem or a difficulty or by troubles in life that you feel you've been just trying to sort those out for such a long time, it just wears you down and exhausts you. And after a while, you just feel you don't have the strength for it. You feel drained by it. It's difficult to get yourself up and get on with life. It's such a common experience that it has its own four-letter acronym, TATT, tired all the time. The NHS website says that is one of the most common reasons people see a GP, feeling drained, feeling exhausted, not being sure of the reason for that. And of course, it can be that there is a physical medical reason. We talk about energy, lacking energy, and of course that energy has a very kind of literal meaning sometimes, that we just need more food in our bodies, we just need more rest and more sleep, or there's something medical going on that is getting in the way, an iron deficiency or some other health issue. But sometimes when we talk about lacking energy, we're talking about something else which might be going on instead, might be going on as well. Very often, because there's something that human beings need. We're not just bodies. We're not just physical, we're not just chemicals. There's something more that we need. And we're missing something else, missing something even more than sleep or exercise or medication. And that is hope. Human beings need hope. We can't find energy, we can't find motivation, we can't keep going. We become weak and weary when we're lacking in hope. And that is part of where the Christian faith is such a great help to human beings. It is all about finding hope in Jesus Christ and finding hope in God. But even when we've heard that and we know that, and even when we believe that, still it is hard to take that on board. Still we need that hope. We need to hear that hope. We need to be fed and strengthened by that hope day by day. And it's very easy for Christians as well as those who are not Christians to become weak and weary. Often our problems seem very big, and our God, well, some people don't believe in God at all, and others, we forget him, and he becomes, in our hearts and our minds, he becomes too small. That's the title for our talk today, Is Your God Too Small? That's why today's Bible reading was written. These chapters of Isaiah are called the Book of Comfort, from chapter 40 on to about chapter 55. God is comforting people. He's speaking through Isaiah, not to Isaiah's generation, but to later generations. Isaiah knows they are going to face devastating difficulties. Their world blown apart, the whole city that they live in destroyed and conquered, people taken away as captives and as prisoners in exile. And it looks as if all hope is gone and all is lost. And last Sunday we looked at chapters 41 to 11. God is making a promise there, a promise that he will come. That he will come to his people, that he will restore, and that he will rescue. But when we're waiting for that and trying to keep going for that, it is easy to become weary and to tire. The problem seems so big. Is God really coming? Will he really help? Can he really help? We tire of that weight. So let's then take encouragement and hope and comfort from these verses. Let's look at them together. The big thing that they're saying to us is that God is beyond compare. God is so much greater. There's no contest between God and anything else. Nothing compares to him. And God makes that point in Isaiah by asking a series of questions from verse 12 onwards. Did you notice that as it was read? Verse 12, who has measured the waters? Halfway through the verse, who has held the dust? Verse 13, who can fathom the spirit? Verse 14, whom did the Lord consult? Or down near the bottom, verse 18, with whom then will you compare God? Over the page, verse 25, to whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal? That's the big theme from verses 12 to 26. No one compares to God. There is nothing and no one that is in any way like him. He is bigger and greater than any of the challenges we face. He is our hope. And that's really unpacked in more detail in these verses, lots of ways in which God is beyond compare. He's beyond compare to our wisdom. Verses 12 to 14. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Isaiah is saying, look, imagine God is, well, you know, in your kitchen at home, you weigh things and you measure things, and that's all manageable for you. You can grasp what's going on there. You might get a little bit of salt for your dish, and just have a little bit of in the hollow of your hand and think, oh, that looks about the right amount, and put it into the dish. You might have some kitchen scales that you use to weigh a bit of flour or sugar. And God is the creator of the whole universe. To him, the whole universe is that small and on that kind of scale to him. The oceans, more than a billion cubic meters of water. For him, it's as if it fits into the hollow of his hand. If you could travel at the speed of light, you could go round the planet Earth several times in 1 second. You'd go past the moon in a couple of seconds. It would take just more than 4 years to reach the nearest star, more than a billion years to reach the nearest galaxy. And you've barely begun to explore the universe. But Isaiah says to God, he can sort of measure that in his hand. You know, like you in your kitchen, kind of marking off the garlic bread. How much are you going to cut it? How many pieces are you going to cut it into? For him, it's as small as that. He comprehends things that are beyond us to imagine. Verse 13 carries on. Who can fathom the Spirit of the Lord or instruct the Lord as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him? And who taught him the right way? Who was it that taught him knowledge or showed him the path of understanding? Do you see the point there? God didn't go to school. God didn't read a book. God never had to learn anything, never could be taught anything, because all knowledge and all truth comes from him. He created all of it. The most complicated and advanced maths or physics is just barely scratching the surface of his grasp of how things work. He thought of all of it. And we struggle for many long years of study to try and grasp even just a fraction of it. God is, his wisdom, his knowledge is far greater. These words in verses 13 and 14 are used a couple of times in the New Testament. And Paul uses them in his letters, Romans, end of Romans 11, 1 Corinthians 2. And both times he's saying, look, the good news of Jesus comes from the wisdom of God. It's something we would never have come up with. That is way beyond human understanding. We're going to have the Lord's Supper later. As we receive bread, as we receive wine, we are remembering that God has the wisdom to find ways of helping us that no human being could ever imagine. We would never dream of thinking that the real solution to human problems, the real way to rescue us, is for God to come and give his life and die for us on the cross. That is the God that we hope in. That is the God that we trust in, a God with wisdom far beyond ours. God is beyond compared to our wisdom. And God is beyond compared to our fears. To our fears in verse 15 to 17. The great enemies that we dread are nothing at all in comparison to God. Verse 15. Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust. So when he talks here about nations or about islands, this is Isaiah saying to Jerusalem, those other countries, those powerful countries, the ones that have been attacking you and invading you, the ones that have come and destroyed your city and taken people captive, what are they to God? If you hold an empty bucket and a drop of water falls into it and you look at it, you're still looking at an empty bucket. You're not going to show it to someone and say, well, look at my water. They're going to say, well, it's empty. It's an empty bucket. It's just got a drop of water. And all the powerful nations of the world are like that to God, just a drop. They're like the dust. You get the weighing scales out of your kitchen cupboard and you set them to zero. There might be a little bit of dust on there if you haven't used them for a while. It might blow off. The dust is not going to make a difference. You're not going to be able to tell. It's not going to affect the weight of anything. And that is the significance to God of these great dangerous enemies they were afraid of. There was a place nearby called Lebanon, still called Lebanon, famous then for mountains covered in tall trees that they would cut down and sell and make for a profit. But all of that is worthless to God, we're told. So verse 16, Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires. And you cut down all those massive trees and turn them into a fire to present an offering to God, he would think it worth nothing. Not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him, all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless, less than nothing. What is it that you fear? What are the overwhelming dangers? Isn't it a comfort? Isn't it a help to know that God cares, that God rescues, that God helps, that God loves us? And those things that feel so overwhelming to us are so small and so insignificant compared to his greatness and his power. God is beyond compared to our wisdom, to our fears, to our imagination. In other words, we can't picture God. We can't, in our minds, we can't picture him. We can't portray him with our creativity because he's too great and doesn't compare to anything we might imagine. So verse 18, chapter 40, verse 18. With whom then will you compare God? To what image will you liken him? As for an idol, a metal worker casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold, and fashions silver chains for it. A person too poor to present such an offering selects wood that will not rot. They look for a skilled worker to set up an idol that will not topple. You see, in those days, people worshipped lots of different gods, and they would represent their gods with a little carving or a little statue. Their god, they might imagine, what is our god like? Maybe he looks kind of part human, part animal. They might have him kind of holding a bolt of lightning, a little stick man with a bolt of lightning. They'd find some way to represent their god. But Isaiah says, well, what image could you come up with that would in any way do justice to God? He created all of those things, that you've, everything you've ever seen or known in the universe, however impressive, is something that to him is small that he made. So when you try to portray him in some way and create an image of him, really you're just kind of insulting him. And Isaiah, kind of mocking, teasing here, says, look, when you make an image, you have to pay for decent materials, otherwise it's just going to rot. You have to go to someone who's quite skilled, otherwise it's just going to topple over and fall. The thing that you're making is so ridiculous, so silly, so small in comparison to the real God. We shouldn't try to imagine God in our minds. We often say things like, well, I like to think of God as being like this. Well, the God that I believe in would never do that. But what we're doing is we're thinking of God as if he was just like us, but a bit better. And we're making him so small and so tiny compared to the real God. What a great God to hope in, to trust in, that this is the God who's coming to save us, a God who is beyond our imagination. And he's beyond compare to our power, to our control, the ways that we try to manage and control what happens in our world is nothing compared to God, who rules above all of that and oversees things from far above. So verse 21, chapter 4, verse 21, verse 21, do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy, spreads them out like a tent to live in. He sits enthroned. God is on a throne. He's the real ruler. He's the real one in control. And everything below him, well, people are just looking down at grasshoppers. So you don't often see grasshoppers. I mean, there are grasshoppers in the UK. You don't get to see them very often. The other day I was out doing a little bit of gardening, checking my the leaves on my roses had all these tiny little green bugs, not a good thing. I wasn't sure if they were there to start with. I had to kind of peer down quite carefully and have a look. And I was just about able to spot them kind of scurrying around, and I'm afraid they didn't last long. I dealt with them. God looks down at important, powerful, impressive people, and to him they're just like these little bugs on a leaf, so small and so insignificant. It says here that's true even of the people who rule us and lead us. Verse 23, he brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. That must have been a relief. Remember, Jerusalem is being ruled by powerful leaders who are oppressing them. So it's a relief to know that. Verse 24, no sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. You've got elections coming up this week, national elections later in the year. You'll see that. You'll see people making decisions over our lives, just coming and going and being replaced all the time. And we're told here God controls all of this. To him, someone who is dangerous or powerful, it's like when a child at the end of the summer picks up a dandelion and they've turned into just kind of white fluff on the top, and the child just blows on it and the fluff just goes off in the air. The powerful rulers of our world come and go, and for God that is a very short time. You and I may feel helpless and out of control with what is going on. But the God who has promised to come to us, who cares for us deeply, and who's promised to rescue us, to him, all of these are small things. He is beyond compare. And what difference does that make to us? Well, that's how Isaiah finishes the chapter. If that is God, if God is like that, if God is beyond compare, knowing that gives us strength. Knowing that truth about God, knowing who it is who comes to help and rescue, that is what will give us strength when we're weary. Putting hope in that God is what stops us feeling overwhelmed and giving up. So chapter 40, verse 27. Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God? That's how they felt. That's how the people of Israel felt in the exile, and they're called Jacob or Israel there. My way is hidden. My cause is disregarded. Nobody sees what I'm going through. It's being overlooked. It's being ignored. No one's doing anything to put it right. The more people you get to know in life, the more you realize that often even those who seem to be kind of outwardly on top of things and self-sufficient and strong and at ease, actually they're wrestling very often with deep struggles that others are not aware of. Sometimes it can be difficult to open up and share that with people. Sometimes we just think, well, why bother to do that? Who's going to help? What difference is it going to make? So we carry on in silence. And as Christians, sometimes we feel that way even about God, that we've prayed about this, that we've brought it to him. And we've asked and asked, but still we struggle. And we're just weary of that. And Isaiah says to us, verse 28, do you not know? Have you not heard? Because, of course, many of us do know. And we have heard. And we say, well, I've heard all this before. I know this message. I know these things about the Christian faith and about God. But in those times when we're feeling overwhelmed and weak and struggling, God becomes small and we need to hear it afresh. And keep hearing and keep remembering the things that we've heard and known for a long time. What Isaiah wants us to remember is who God is. The Lord, verse 28, it's 28 at the bottom, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. Just remember who God is. We get tired and weary because our strength and energy comes from elsewhere. We need food. We need sleep. Even the sun that gives energy to the earth is slowly burning up and using up its energy. But God is not like that. God is the everlasting God. God is the eternal God. God is the creator of everything. All the power, all the energy comes from him, and he never becomes any less by doing that. He is a source of eternal energy. And if that is what he is like, then he is able to give strength to the weak and the weary. Verse 29, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. Even the youngest and the strongest. I was helping my daughter to move house. And we all said to each other, what we really need is some young men to kind of carry furniture up a flight of stairs and carry boxes up a flight of stairs. They just, that's what you do, isn't it, in these situations, kind of 18, 19-year-old young man. Their energy keeps going for longer, but even they run out, says Isaiah. Even they will wear out. They will also, in the end, just be kind of lying flat on the carpet, needing a break. But not God. God's energy never runs out. And those who hope in the Lord, you see, how do you draw on that energy? How do you receive that energy? Well, you do it by putting your hope not in anything else, but in the Lord, in his promises, in his love, in his power to come and rescue. verse 31, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. Yes, the strength will fade, but it will be refreshed and renewed and restored by hoping in the Lord. Literally, the word there is waiting in the Lord. It's easy to become weary and tired when we're waiting for help and waiting for something to be put right. But when we're leaving it to the Lord and trusting that he does that and will do that, well, that's like a kind of phone on low battery. That's us being plugged into the mains, into a supply that recharges. It says here they will soar like eagles. Eagles just carried by the wind. It's another power that is carrying them along. They will soar like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. If I had written the Bible, it's a good job I didn't write the Bible, but if I had written the Bible, I think I would have put that the other way round. I think I would have wanted it to kind of build to a climax. I would have wanted to start with walking and not growing faint, and then come on to running and not growing weary, and then be soaring on eagles. But Isaiah does it the other way round. Because for him, the climax is just walking. There may be times in our lives when we can soar like eagles and run through life. But if all we can manage is just to walk, just to keep going, just to put one foot in front of the other, spiritually speaking, then that is all we need. And God gives us the strength to do that when we hope in him. A few weeks ago, I listened to an interview with Jasmine Paris. I don't know if you heard of her. Last month, she became the first woman to finish the something called the Barclay Marathon. Apparently, it's one of the world's hardest races. People run for 2.5 days, no time to sleep. They run through the night as well. It's up and down steep hills, non-stop for 60 miles. She was hallucinating. She said she was desperate to stop. She had 8 minutes left to go, and she had another kilometer to do uphill. She said, "It's the toughest thing I've ever done." She said she made her first attempt to find out whether it might be possible to finish. But the reason she kept trying until she did finish is because she believed it was possible. And there are times in our lives when it's really tough to find strength and energy. And you and I need to believe that it is possible. We need to believe in this God who is beyond compare, who is far bigger than we imagine, than we hope, who makes our challenges and our difficulties much smaller in our hearts and in our eyes. And that hope is what we need to keep going, to soar like eagles, to run and not grow weak, to walk and not be faint.